Welcome to the PitCast. I'm your host, Bridget Pierce, and today I'm here with Akash Bomek as a part of our author's interview series. So Akash, thank you for coming on to the PitCast. Could you please take a second to introduce yourself and give a brief overview of your article?
Thanks for having me. My name is Akash Bomek. I'm a current sophomore here at UNC, and I wrote a paper on The White Tiger, which is actually a novel by an Indian author named Arvind Adiga. And what my article discussed was kind of the ideas of individualism and what it can do to a person, especially socially. So I investigated the loneliness that can come with individualism and the success that comes along with that individualism. I discussed how that can actually make people feel a little more disconnected from each other.
Cool. Yeah, thank you for sharing. So why did you write this piece about The White Tiger and how it explores amorality and inequality in Indian society?
Right. So in today's society, I think there is a huge obsession with the idea of success. You know, everyone wants to be successful. They want to have that nice career or a nice house or a nice car. And I don't think people have always acted this way. So I read The White Tiger as part of a book I read in my English 141 class last year. And I was really interested in these ideas. What can success do to a person, essentially? And in The White Tiger, what it's all about is there's a sweet maker. His name is Balram Halwai. And he essentially rises up through the ranks of Indian society, become a driver for a richer family in India. And then after that, he actually runs his own taxi cab company. So he kind of rises through the ranks of Indian society to become more richer. But through that rise, he uses a lot of deceit and a lot of unethical methodologies to achieve that end result. And I thought that was super interesting because in today's world, I think that idea of how much work you can produce and how successful you are puts a concrete price on your value as a human being. And those ideas were definitely discussed in The White Tiger. And I thought that was really intriguing to me. And I think that's the main reason I chose to analyze this book.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. So in the article, you mentioned that the unequal society, Indian society, is likened to a jungle. But then at the same time, you also comment on the role of westernization in creating this societal inequality. So how does the novel explore this tension between inequality stemming from an innate human characteristic as shown by the jungle and also being the product of a cultural outside imposition?
Right. So I think one of the main metaphors or on continued themes in the book is the fact that people often act very wild. They're very ferocious. And in fact, that's why the book is called The White Tiger. People often act like animals. And even though we may appear to be civilized superficially, in fact, the people within that society are very wild. And I think that was definitely paralleled in The White Tiger. So for example, one thing I thought super interesting was they built highways in the Indian society. You know, that might appear to be India's salvation, you know, towards modernization and westernization. But one of Balram's drivers, when he runs his taxi cab company, ends up running over a poor man, a man who we don't even learn his name. And when that man's brother who died seeks justice, he goes to the police station. The police essentially tells him to go away. They say, oh, we're going to turn the law against you. We're going to claim that you didn't see the crime or that he didn't die due to legal reasons. And so with this westernization that comes into India, there's a lot of injustice that comes as well. So for example, even though there are laws, the laws are never upheld to those seeking it. Instead, it's kind of more like it's misused so that those in positions of power maintain their power and those at the bottom stay at the bottom. And it's that social divide that I thought was really intriguing. And it's not just applicable to a place like India, but maybe even America or someplace in Europe or anywhere across the world, really. And these themes are very universal. So I also think that with westernization, you may have different classes, but one of the fatal flaws of a society like that is the people within those classes choose not to intermingle with each other. So, for example, we see those within the lower classes, like Balram's original family and society, they act very ferociously. You know, you have a guy named the stork and you have another guy named the mongoose. They control all the trade unions and all the roads, and they require a tax to be paid by the citizens so that they can maintain their pockets. And then as Balram moves up, he realizes that, oh, not many people in this lower class are content with their place. They don't want to move up. And as Balram like becomes a driver for Ashok's family, and then as he runs his own taxi company after actually killing Ashok, he realizes that oftentimes people stay content with what they have, but once they realize that they can achieve something greater, they can often commit unforgivable sins to achieve that end goal. And I think one quote in the book that he mentioned was that, "I had been searching for the key to the door all along, but it turns out that the door was unlocked, so I just opened it." And I think that's very representative of what the book is like, because Balaram, he wants to achieve a greater result for himself, but he realizes that the best way, the most efficient way to achieve that is to just act unethically, renege his connection with other people. And I think that's very tragic, and that definitely made me feel a little pessimistic about the society we're in. But I think we can also learn a lot of lessons through it, and that's kind of what my paper delved into. And
yeah, that's interesting. So it's almost, it sounds to me like what you're saying is that this like imposition of Western culture is really only exacerbating the innate characteristics. Am I reading that correctly?
Exactly. In the book, for example, you see shopping malls and you see huge high rises and skyscrapers and nice cars, but they're all superimposed with those who are below the poverty line. So for example, you might see these high tech or high luxury buildings next to a slum. And even though these areas are next to each other, those who are poor choose not to interact with those who are richer and vice versa. They stay in their own spheres. They fall into their social positions. And that was something that was highly interesting to me. You know, when Balaram first becomes a driver for the Ashok's family, who's richer than him, the other drivers don't turn against Ashok, even though he's the one in a higher social position. Instead, they fight amongst themselves. You know, there's a driver that is antagonistic towards Balaram. And Balaram, in order to get his most successful job as a driver, he actually has to be duplicit against another driver. So he frames him for committing a deed he never did. I believe they try to show that he stole some money or did some sort of crime. And they kicked out that driver and he was able to get his job. So those at the bottom of societies tend to stay at the bottom because they fight amongst themselves. What Balaram says is that when these two worlds collide, the people can be capable of unforgivable sins to achieve their end result. And that was just really shocking to me, because the issue with the book is like, it's not really the sins that people commit, but it's more or less that people sleep well knowing that they commit their sins. They're happy that they do these sins against other people. That was just a phenomenal theme, I suppose, by Adiga.
Yeah. You know, earlier in your response, you brought up how this moment in the book when Balaram is involved in an accident, but he ends up not really taking any blame for it. And I'm really glad that you did, because I think that that part of the book really exemplifies another tension between individuals versus institutions perpetuating the unequal social system. And you've kind of hinted at it before in your previous response, but I was wondering if you could expand on it. And I do have a quote that you could go off of. The quote from your writing is, "Like the jungle, the bureaucracy is its own wild construct because it is utilized and sought after, not because it is noble to perform public service, but because it is practical at solidifying those at the bottom to the bottom. Despite there being outwardly civilized government structures, such as the police, there is no end to Indian inequality because the individuals themselves remain feral."
Yeah, so I think the first thing I would like to talk about is the fact that, like, first of all, that guy died on a highway, right? And I think one of the most pervasive themes that you can learn from that is there's a darkness within people. So I know, for example, in another part of the book, they discuss how different items are dark, and these are items of civilization. So for example, they went into a market, the books are all rotten and dark. And there's another scene where they buy an alcohol bottle. That bottle is black. It's very dark. And that's actually the murder weapon Balaram uses. For example, the highways, they're black. So in that quote, we see that guy die on a highway. But even though that might appear to be, you know, India's road to modernization or westernization, you can just tell by the color, the framing of the story that, in fact, there's a lot of bloodshed on those kinds of landmarks. And it kind of exacerbates that darkness within people. And that's why the society is very wild. You know, you have constructs like the police or the law, but they were never meant to make people more equal. Instead, they were created so that people could stay unequal, so that the rich could, you know, reside in their lofty high rises and the poor, you know, stay at the bottom. And I think that was really shown at the end of the story too, because Balaram, once he kills Ashok using a black alcohol bottle, he runs his own taxi business. but he actually opens his own office and he lives a comfortable life. You know, he has a gold-plated toilet, he has his own desk, his own office, and he has a whole army of drivers working for him to persevere his taxi business. And I thought that was really interesting to me because when I first read the story, I thought that this individualistic society makes people more wild. But now that I'm re-looking at the story, I realize that it can actually make people tamer, more domesticated, and that's what happens to Balaram, because even though he used very feral methods to achieve his end result, he lives a very domesticated life, a very senile life. He doesn't do any of he doesn't wage any of the battles he commits. Instead, his army wages his battles, such as that court case with the man who died on the highway. He makes someone else deal with that case. He doesn't have to deal with that himself. He lives comfortably in his office. And so essentially, I thought that was really interesting because animals don't always have to be wild. They can also be tamed as well. That's what happens to Balaram.
Yeah, and it's almost as if when he, you know, ascends to this higher social status, and as you say, he becomes more domesticated and more tame, it's almost like he sets up a system wherein he makes it so that other people have to be the wild ones. And so in many ways, in him becoming domesticated, he's making other people more feral. But he's also relying on individuals, right?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. And it kind of reminds me of the mafia in a sense, right? You have a don and you have an army of people working for the don. It's kind of in that same sense, you know? In the same vein that a lot of poor lives are sacrificed, such as the guy who died on the highway, so that the richer lives can persevere and persist. It's the same thing with Balaram. He sacrifices his army of more feral people, of poor people who act as his drivers, his minions, so that he himself can persevere. And in fact, he actually has a relative of his named Dharam. And in the story, he tries to groom him in a sense that he can be the next white tiger in a way. You know, he teaches him ideologies of himself, like, oh, you have to act this way in this certain situation. And I thought that was really interesting because the way that society is structured, at least in The White Tiger, is that certain lives are sacrificed. Certain lives that are not as equal compared to other lives are sacrificed so that the lives that do matter can persevere.
Yeah, and I want to go back to something that you just said. You said the lives that do matter. And so when you say the lives that do matter, are you meaning the lives that do matter according to the people who are in power? Are you meaning, what do you mean by that? Could you expand on that?
Yeah, I would say those who are in power, because there's a saying that it's the winners who write history, right? There's a belief that if you want to seek justice, you can achieve justice, or that all lives are meant to be equal. But at least in Balaram society, what I believe I found out was that some lives are just more equal than others, right? If you're richer, if you have a better societal position, you can write history on your own terms and you can write justice on your own terms. And so even though supposedly all humans are worth the same, they're not worth the same in Balaram society because, first of all, the individuals in that society like to see other people suffer. In fact, I think it's self-gratifying that people see each other suffer, right? Like when Balaram was trying to be a driver, the drivers were intermingling amongst themselves and there's a lot of infighting in between. They weren't interested in each other's well-being. And I think that was like a microcosm of that whole westernized society in general, or that society entering westernization. The rich aren't interested in the poor's well-being and the poor really aren't really interested in the rich's well-being. And I think that just exacerbates that disconnection between people, right? So I've always been a believer in humanism, that people can work together to achieve their end goals. But I think The White Tiger is an antithesis to humanistic thought. And I think that's one of the biggest tragedies of the book. And I hope that can be rectified in the future.
And so veering off a little bit from the specific content of your article, what do you feel is the role of art, and specifically literature like The White Tiger, in addressing societal issues? I know you just mentioned that you hope that the issues presented in The White Tiger can be rectified in the future. Do you think that art and literature has a role in pursuing that end?
I would say definitely, because we live in America, right? You know, there's an idea that there's the American dream, that you can go out there and achieve anything you want, anything that interests you. But I think it's also true that, you know, some interests are not as equal as compared to other interests, right? You might want to be like a painter, or you might want to be like a freelance freestylist or a rapper, but those dreams aren't always attainable. Instead, your position in society and your worth in society is determined by how successful you are. And I said this earlier, but even though we don't like to say it, success can put a concrete price on your worth as a human being. If you don't make as much money, people won't look at you the same way compared to someone that does make a lot of money. And the White Tiger struck a chord with me because I always thought you can do things your way, right? There's a song by Frank Sinatra called My Way, and he talks about, you know, how he got into the singing business. And basically what he did was, even though there were a lot of detractors and a lot of people who said that this was an unstable position, that it wasn't right for him, he continued with it and he took that flack. And I think that can be applied to the White Tiger as well, because in the White Tiger, it's not really possible to do things your way, especially if you're at the bottom. Instead, you have to sacrifice those personal aspirations of yours, those personal interests of yours, to achieve a more artificial result, which might be, I have to create my own business. I have to rise up through the societal ranks. And I think art can elucidate on those different themes we have. I think art speaks to different thoughts and different themes that we don't like to talk about in present society, right? We have this professional attitude amongst ourselves. We have different social customs, but they're often unspoken truths we don't like to mention. I think art really speaks to those different qualities that are really integral to our lives we fail to mention because it's not socially acceptable or because it can be detrimental to our careers or to our future aspirations.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. Thank you for your thoughts. So what was your favorite piece of analysis from your article or your favorite part of the novel?
I wouldn't say this is my favorite part, but I think it was the part that made me think the most, in a sense, was the time where they discuss ballroom sexual attitudes when he is faced with, you know, more money or more riches or more women. Because, for example, ballroom actually meets a very fat politician. You know, he's a politician high up in the ranks of Indian society, and he actually makes out with a Ukrainian student. And in this passage where they discuss Balram's thoughts during this whole scenario, he's actually sexually enthralled by this whole situation. And what I learned is that sexual power is actually connected with societal power, right? Those in lower societal positions, like Balram's brother, he was actually forced into an arranged marriage, so he couldn't choose the way he wanted to live his life. But those who are in positions of power, like the politician, they have sexual power over other people. And I thought that was a really interesting perspective because it shows that your value in society, your position in society, can attack you to your very core. It can attack you to a very basic level, even sexually. And that's what happens to Balram when he's faced with the prospect of higher riches working for Ashok, when he's faced with, you know, nicer clothes and a nicer place to live in, he's enthralled by it. And I think that shows that nowadays people can very often be enthralled by the idea of having a new career or a better position in society. And I think that's not always good. I don't think that's always good. I think that leaves people more disconnected and a little more lonely.
Yeah. That is a very interesting piece of analysis. I agree that maybe it wouldn't be your favorite part of the book to read, but it is certainly thought-provoking. So I was wondering, could you talk us through the process that you went through in writing this article?
Yes. So first, as I mentioned earlier, I actually wrote this article as an essay for my English 141 class. And that was basically a class with world literature. So we read a couple works from Haiti in the Caribbean. We read a couple works from Spain and a couple works from Africa. And The White Tiger was one of the book works we read from Asia, actually. So I was really intrigued by the prospect, you know, coming from Indian ancestry myself. I really wanted to write about this book. So first of all, I went through a writing process with my professor named Mark Cohen. He actually worked in Hollywood before he became a UNC professor. And I've been a huge fan of movies. I'm pretty active on Letterboxd and the Criterion Collection. So we kind of vibed together in that sense. And we just discussed different aspects of society we didn't really believe in a sense. And I thought that was really interesting. You know, I attended all his office hours and we were just talking about, you know, some of the laments we have, right? Because Mark Cohen, he was very interested in movies as well, Dr. Cohen. But he saw that that environment was very cutthroat. And, you know, he decided to become a professor because he thought, well, at least in my perspective, I think he thought that that was more fulfilling to himself and, you know, to teach other people. And I thought that was a really great perspective to have. So I kind of discussed those ideas of aspirations and pipe dreams, and I tried to connect those to the White Tiger. So we were in a lot of rounds of edits. I think it was around a 2 or 3 week process where we were just corresponding back and forth to talk about the essay. And at the end, I had a final product ready, which was the essay I have here. I mean, of course, there were a couple more edits I made, but in a sense, it was a very collaborative process. You know, I talked to the students around me. We were in a very discussion-based class talking to other people about the White Tiger since we read it as a class. And I was talking to my professor as well to discuss, oh, what future steps can I take or what future claims can I address in my work? So in the end, it was a very much a team effort. It wasn't just an individualized effort for myself.
Yeah, and so did your argument change throughout this process?
Yeah, I think my argument changed because I think I was very blinded by one idea, which is people can be very wild. But after discussing with Dr. Cohen, I realized that not everyone acts wildly these days. In fact, they can be very domesticated. And that's what I found with Balram at the end of the story, is that he's content with his domestication. He's fine living in his office like the rich people that lived before him did. And he's fine letting other people wage his battles for him. I thought that was very interesting because being animalistic doesn't just mean that you want to act savagely. Instead, it can also mean that you just want to live like a dog or a cat. You just want to live not as a human, essentially. I thought that was very interesting. And he kind of helped me elucidate or point me in the right direction to the idea.
Yeah, cool. And so after you mentioned that you had finished your process for the class and that you had a final product. So what was the process like publishing for the Pitt Journal and getting it published here?
Yeah, so it was a very long process. There was a lot of edits we had to make. So essentially, I was connected with an editor, and we were discussing different aspects of the paper, you know, things she enjoyed, things that could have improvement in. And it was definitely a learning process for me, you know, as someone who was never as skilled at English and is always learning to be a better communicator and a better writer. I think that was a really eye-opening process to be able to see what aspects of my writing can I improve. So we were in we held a couple meetings throughout the fall 2023 semester, just discussing what could be done better in my paper. And we went through a couple rounds of edits. And at the very end, we had a final paper ready with all those edits rectified. And I thought that was really interesting. And it was as I said, that was also a team effort as well. You know, having other editors, you know, speak on their writing experience and tell me, oh, what can you improve? What makes this paper great? And what ideas they wanted to hear more about. So that was definitely a great guide to how I can be a better writer myself.
Yeah. And so how was the process different when you were getting feedback from your professor, Dr. Mark Cohen, versus the peers? So like your editor from the Pitt Journal, but also your peers in the class. Like, was there a difference there?
Yeah, I think so. So I think that when I was with the Pitt Journal, I think it was definitely more objective feedback, right? Because you have a viewer that's never seen the paper before, has never met me before in person. And I think that was very useful, right? Because having that objective feedback, knowing what points in my writing can I improve so I can better communicate my ideas to other people, was really something interesting to have. Because, you know, being in that class environment in a very discussion-based class, you kind of know people really closely and you kind of know the professor really well. So they kind of assume that we're on the same page on certain things. But when you're trying to communicate those ideas to other people, you can't make any assumptions. You have to make sure you define every point clearly and speak on every theme clearly. And I think discussing with the Pitt Journal editors really helped elucidate on that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that is pretty much all of the questions that we have time for. But is there anything that we didn't cover in this interview? I know we kind of jumped around around topics quite a bit, but is there anything that we missed that you would like to discuss, or any final comments, questions that you have?
No, but thanks guys for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming onto the PittCast and also for joining us in the Pitt Journal. We are so glad to have you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.